Welcome to Going Rogue Money Ministry. Align your values and finances, live your ideal lifestyle. I'm your host, Melissa Myers, number one best-selling author, entrepreneur, wealth manager, and CFP professional, along with Holly Urbanek, podcast producer and co-host. Does thinking about money cause unnecessary stress in your life? Are you tired of feeling anxious, guilty, or embarrassed about your financial situation? Do you struggle with imposter syndrome or feel financially trapped? We're women empowering women because we've been there. We'll bring you inspiration, motivation, education, and activation strategies for living a more fulfilled lifestyle. You're in the right pod if you're ready to feel good about your life and your finances. Welcome to our empowered community. Ready to go rogue? Hey, Holly.
Hey.
Hi, Ina.
Hello.
So we're just curious. We know you're from Chicago. What do you get on your deep dish pizza?
Oh, that's a good question. I kind of get everything on it. So my favorite place up in Lakeview, I think it's close to Lakeview, called Peacock. So they have a really, really good pizza there. That's where I go. But I like all of it, not in particular topics.
Okay, awesome. What's your favorite?
I'm a huge fan of pizza. It seems like every Friday I'm trying to explore a new pizza place or discover a different kind of pizza I haven't tried before. But for me, I like all of the meat. So like sausage and bacon and pepperoni. And my husband would kill me for this, but I actually really like ham and pineapple on my pizza too.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm
one of those. The sweet and
salty. Yeah. Yeah. Where is the best place that you've had pizza, Melissa?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm wearing my Iceland necklace. I just got back from Iceland. Oh, I was there in October, and I had been seeing all these ads on Facebook pop up for the Black Crust Pizza in Vik. So when we were there, that became one of our destination places specifically to get that Black Crust Pizza. And it's a sourdough. It has activated charcoal, and it looks funky
because
the black crust, but it was the crust itself was delicious. And then the toppings were fabulous as well. So anybody heading to Iceland or need a reason to go to Iceland, if you're a pizza fan, go to Vik, V-I-K, and get their black crust pizza. You won't be disappointed.
Wow, that's really crazy. I don't think I could bring myself to willingly see black crust on a pizza and be like, yeah, I want to eat that. That probably is delicious. So
we're going to get you out of your comfort zone, Holly.
All right.
Well, speaking of comfort zones, I am excited to make the connection with today's guest here on the Going Rogue Money Ministry. Our guest today is Dr. Ina Liko, who received her Doctor of Pharmacy degree at the University of Illinois at Chicago, and that is where she was initially exposed to pharmacogenomics. After graduation, she completed a residency at Monroe Clinic, where her research project was focused on implementation of pharmacogenomics. She then gained experience in implementing the pharmacogenomics in a larger scale in various therapeutic classes by completing a fellowship in the clinical implementation of pharmacogenomics at the University of Colorado. Dr. Liko now serves as the Director of Clinical Pharmacogenomics Operations at RX Genomics, where she works with a multidisciplinary team to disseminate the implementation of RX Genomics Pharmacogenomics Program. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And I want to congratulate you for actually saying pharmacogenomics so smoothly.
Thank you. I have
trouble with that. So
I'll admit, I practiced quite a few times.
Well, Melissa, I know that you have a degree in biology, but Dr. Liko, can you tell me what the heck is pharmacogenomics? For those that might be curious and don't know, like me, I don't know what the heck that is.
Yeah, and that's a great question. So what it really is looking at how do your genetics really affect medication response. So it's really in the name of it. So if you break it down, pharmacy relating to medications and then genetics. So that's what it really is in a nutshell. It can really help with choosing the right medication so that you don't have to go through that trial and error period. What happens right now with medications is you go to the doctor, and let's say that, you know, you have high blood pressure, or maybe they diagnose you with a mental health illness. So the doctor will give you a medication that has been prescribed most commonly to a lot of people. And a lot of the times they'll say, well, you may experience some of these side effects, or this may actually not work for you. So I will monitor you again and come back in a couple of weeks to see what medication works better for you. So that is more of a trial and error traditional path. With pharmacogenomics, the doctor can actually have these results in their hands, and they can say, well, actually, these are the medications that are approved to treat this condition. For example, these are the medications that are approved to treat depression. However, based on your genetics profile, this particular medication may actually work better for you because it's not going to cause as many side effects, and it's also you're going to respond better to it. So it's just another tool that the doctors can use to come up with medication recommendations.
Wow. You just explained it so simply. I appreciate that for sure. I'm like, where was this information 15 years ago?
Yeah. How new is this concept in the application of it to mainstream medicine? Because I only became aware of it in the last couple of years.
Actually, when I answer this question, it surprises a lot of people. But pharmacogenomics has been, especially in research, and for at least 50 years. I mean, we've known about the science of it for a very long time. Now, the application of it has been in the recent years. So I want to say in the last 5 to 10 years, then we do see it more in actually some medical centers. So University of Colorado was where I did my fellowship, and I think we were one of the first ones to implement it in that scale. But there are some other institutions across the country, like University of Florida, and some other ones in Minnesota as well, that have started to implement it more.
So you were in pharmacy school. When you went to pharmacy school, did you know you wanted to get into this specialty field, or, you know, were you on a different path and made a transition?
Yeah, so I was really lucky when I went to pharmacy school, and I learned about it in one of our classes. Actually, it was an elective class that we had on pharmacogenomics, and it just looked interesting to me just from when I learned about it was personalized medicine. So if you know, in my personal life, I like to personalize everything as well. I go to that store, Things Remembered, a lot, and have all sorts of personalization. So I thought, wow, I definitely want to be a pharmacist, but if there's a way that I can personalize medicine, that sounds amazing. So that's when I learned about it from that class. And then from there on, I reached out to some of the professors that were teaching that class and got more exposure in their lab as well.
What are some of the biggest success stories that you've seen come out of the application of, I'll now say PGX, if that's a good abbreviate?
I see patients almost every day at Rx Genomics as well. And some of the evidence with a lot of the drugs here is in a lot of different fields, but mental health is pretty big. We've seen patients that have started on a medication and been to their provider for the past maybe 6 to 9 months, or even some of my patients have been trying to find the right medication for almost a year, and changed at least like 3 to 4 medications and come to us in some cases as a last resort to find out, you know, what is the right medication for them, because they've tried so many other ones. And, you know, doing this test and figuring out that actually, that medication did not work for you, or you had side effects because of your genetics, is really helpful for people. And they can then see a sigh of relief and say, oh, this is actually not me. I'm not at fault here. I wasn't doing anything wrong. It's actually my genetics. So if I had this information, I would have found the right drug. So then, you know, we work with them to find the right medication, and then make a work with their providers to recommend to their providers what medications would be safer for those patients. So that's one example. Another example, it's also actually preventative medicine. So one of the medications that has a really high evidence for this is a medication that is called clopidogrel and is given after you have a heart attack. So it's really important that this medication works after you have a heart attack to prevent blood clots from occurring and going to your brain, so you have another stroke or another heart attack. In about 30% of the population, it's not going to work for them based on their genetics, especially in the Caucasian population. So having that information for our patients has been helpful to know in the future that, hey, this medication, it's not going to work for you if you're ever in that situation, an emergency situation that you have a heart attack, you're not going to think about genetics at that point. So it's good to have this information so that you know that you're taking the safest medication.
So if somebody goes through genetic testing for purposes of their medications, does their test results go and hit their medical insurance records, their MIB?
Yeah, so actually medical insurance, there's a law that protects you against that. So in 2008, GINA came out. It's a genetics law that protects health insurance from having any sort of access, also using this information against you.
Okay, that's really good, because I was thinking, because we offer insurance, you know, life insurance and disability and long-term care insurance. And so sometimes certain medications can actually prohibit someone from being able to get the coverage that they might otherwise have been able to have provided.
Mm-hmm. So I do want to clarify, the only type of insurance that's not protected is life insurance. But with pharmacogenomics, I also want to clarify that, so it's not really telling you anything about disease states. It's only telling you about medications. So even if this information were to go to the, you know, the life insurance, it's not really telling them that, oh, you'll have this predisposition to this genetic disease and that will make you ineligible. It's just saying that based on these genes, these drugs may not work for you. Here are some other drugs that will work for you. So it's really not that high of a risk when it comes to that.
Oh, that's awesome. Good. Thank you. So anybody listening, yeah, you can be assured that if you go down this path, that it's not going to necessarily preclude you from getting coverage down the road. Okay, great. So are you finding that providers are on board for this kind of testing and application of the knowledge that comes from the testing?
Yeah, great question. So I've actually seen a little bit of a shift with more providers becoming on board with it in the recent years. As they learn more about it, more of them are becoming on board. I want to say there is also a difference between them, you know, being educated versus not, and also feeling that they have the support that they need. So pharmacists really are very knowledgeable about drugs, and they are kind of the easiest providers to really take charge of this and say to provide those recommendations for doctors, nurse practitioners, physician assistants. So with having the right support, providers are definitely more open to trying this. And also I've seen in the mental health realm, psychologists actually have a lot of knowledge about pharmacogenomics, but primary care providers are definitely interested in it. They would just need a little bit more support from a pharmacist or someone that is knowledgeable so that they can provide that support to their patients.
What about insurance companies, health insurance companies specifically, when it comes to the prescription coverage? Are they on board?
Yeah, so great question. There's been some work done with insurance companies. Overall, some insurances will cover it, but you'll need to have a specific panel. So United Health covers a specific panel. I think it's about 15 genes, mainly again for mental health. And other insurances, I think it would depend on a case-by-case example. There's sometimes Medicare will cover certain genes as well. So, but it would depend on the state and the type of insurance that the patient has. Overall, insurance is not covering it on a large scale, but there are certain pockets that are covering it there. And I know there's a lot of work currently being done to get more insurance companies on board.
So they're coming more and more on board from the testing perspective.
Yes.
Yes. What about if the testing reveals that a particular drug will work better based on this person's genetics? What if that is outside of the scope of what the insurance company normally covers? Is there a way to use that as a case for them to make an exception?
Yes, absolutely. So we sometimes, you know, submit what we're called, pharmacists submit what they're called prior authorizations forms. So this is a form that insurance companies require so that the pharmacist gives information about that specific drug that they're requesting and what the reasoning is, and the insurance company will review that on a separate case. This is common practice. A lot of pharmacists do this for a lot of different medications, depending on the condition that the patient has. With genetics, that's what we've seen as well. When I was at University of Colorado, for example, we implemented clopidogrel, CYP2C19 gene. So with clopidogrel, for patients that were not supposed to be on it because of genetics, there's another alternative, but it's a little bit more expensive, called Brilinta. So with that, we actually came up with a prior authorization form that we wrote, you know, the reasoning for it, and then the pharmacies would submit that to insurance. Because overall, so if you think about it, in the case of clopidogrel, clopidogrel itself is not very expensive, and this other drug, Brilinta, is probably 5 or 6 times as expensive. However, if you're avoiding a heart attack or a stroke on the medical side, then that's, I mean, that saves you a lot more money than, you know, not giving the patient Brilinta.
Yeah, it seems like the insurance companies would want to save money as well as the patients themselves. You had a note for us about asking about the medication classes that are affected by PGX as it relates to maternal health. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Oh, sure. So since it is Women's Health Month, and that's why I wanted to kind of bring that up a little bit more.
Awesome.
So yeah, there are a couple medications when we think about that, from, you know, from preconception to the conception itself, and then even afterwards, after women give birth. You know, very first one is birth control, for example. So that's pretty much used to not get pregnant, but there is a gene called, there are actually two genes, factor 2 and factor 5, that can affect whether you will have an increased risk of blood clots or not. So even for women that are taking birth control, it is a good idea to check your genes to see whether you are at an increased risk for that. And with maternal health as well, looking at, you know, some women that do want to get pregnant, some of the fertility medications may be affected by genetics, even though the research is still ongoing there. But during pregnancy, some women, you know, may have issues with nausea and vomiting. So that medication is also affected by genetics. The dose may need to be changed, or a different medication altogether would be needed. And then during, you know, labor and delivery as well, some of the pain medications are affected. So Tramadol or codeine, or even some of the anti-inflammatories like ibuprofen and Celebrex, they're also affected by genetics. So knowing, you know, which medications to take would also be important there.
Were you saying, sorry to go back to those other medications, Tramadol and ibuprofen, are you saying that those are like making a woman more susceptible to blood clots? Or not?
Oh, no, sorry. That was kind of a different topic there. So when it comes to using them for pain, depending on genetics, they may or may not work very well. And in some cases, they may actually cause side effects.
If someone wants to have pharmacogenomics testing for any reason, do they start with their PCP? Do they reach out to an organization like yours? Like, what would, if they were trying to do this and self-advocate, what would be the natural steps they would take?
Yeah, great question. So the easiest thing to do is to really just go to our website. So ExactMeds, if they're interested in our test, exactmeds.com. And then you can just order the test yourself. We'll ship it to you at your house. There are some instructions for how to do the cheek swab. It's actually easier than doing the COVID test. It's just a cheek swab. It looks exactly like the one, you know, you use for COVID, but you just swab 30 seconds on one side, 30 seconds on the other side, and then you put it back in the tube and you send it back to us. Then we will run it through our lab, get back with the results, and then call the patient or call, you know, the client to talk to them about the results. We do have certified pharmacists that are specifically trained in pharmacogenomics to talk about the results here. And if they're, so we never advise the patient to make any medication changes on their own or without their doctor's approval. So we just give them information about the results. And if there is anything that needs to be changed, we will then work with their doctor. So get permission from the patient to contact their provider. We will call the provider and work with them in explaining what the variations are, what the recommendations are, and then go from there.
As far as the testing goes, understanding it's specific to pharmaceuticals, do you have tests that also help with understanding what supplements we might be taking and wasting our money on, or what ones we're not that we could be really benefiting from?
Yeah, great question. So we don't just yet, but there are, we're actually working on that right now and having a nutrigenomics offering as well. But so our company doesn't just yet, but there are other companies out there that do look at nutrigenomics. The evidence for pharmacogenomics is a little bit stronger. There's still some studies coming out for the supplements as well, but not as strong in terms of the evidence, even though I do expect it to become even stronger in the future.
Is that because with supplements, there can be more variation in terms of the composition from brand to brand?
Yes, exactly. There's a little bit more variations, and just a lot of people, you know, they're looking into it more in the recent years. And because with supplements, they don't go through that rigorous process of drug approval like, you know, prescription medication would. So there's a little bit of a lack of understanding there, but there's definitely more research being done. So, I mean, I would expect in the next couple of years here that we'll know more. And but there's definitely tests out there that can help. And like I said, we're currently working on a solution ourselves for nutrigenomics.
That's great. Yeah, I always wonder, is this really helping? And is it just, you know, going in and going out and costing me a lot of money? So that'll be great to see that coming down the horizon. Are there any barriers when it comes to testing? Anything that we should know about?
You know, the biggest barrier is really the cost. Not all insurance companies are covering it. And if they're covering it, then they're covering certain genes and certain panels. But, you know, having more information and having a good panel that actually has all of the genes that have great evidence is very beneficial. You know, in terms of the cost of the lab here, is the same cost if you do a panel, if you do one gene, or it's a very similar cost when it comes to the lab. But like I said, insurance companies kind of pick and choose which genes to cover. So because of that, the cost is number one there. And another reason is education. So providers need to be educated about what is pharmacogenomics. I mean, it's a really long word. And like I explained in the beginning, Melissa, you did a great job with saying it. A lot of people can't even say that word. That's how long it is. But when you boil down to it, it's really easy. You're using your genetics as just additional information to choose a medication. So more providers need to be educated about this, so then they feel comfortable with it. You know, it's no different than taking a cholesterol medication, and then you go to your doctor and they do a cholesterol test for you to see, you know, what your levels are and to find if they need to increase or decrease the dose. So this is very similar to that in terms of having this test done, and it should be standard of care because you're using this information to then come up with medication recommendations without forgetting all of the other clinical factors that play a role into that, of course.
Do you see it becoming a standard of care then, that it'll just be implemented across the board?
I really hope so. I really think that it should definitely be standard of care just because it's more information. I do see it, you know, going that way. I know there is a bill in Congress right now, right drug, right dose, that we're pushing for pharmacogenomics to really be part of all hospitals and to have that information available. So I really hope, in the next few years here that this is more widespread. What is also really encouraging is that patients, so the general public, is actually learning about it, which I think is great. Because, Melissa, like you said, you just heard about this a few years ago when this has been, the science has known about it for, 50 years, and we've been working on it for such a long time. So I think that is a very positive thing that's happening right now, that the general public is learning about it as we spread more awareness about pharmacogenomics. I think maybe in the next decade or so, I really hope that we have the understanding of what pharmacogenomics is, and we don't treat it as, something special that we learn about, but that everyone is really educated about it.
That's great. Yeah.
I could agree with that for sure. And I know, I bet the impact alone, like you said, the general public being more aware of what pharmacogenomics is, and then also saving those young adults or adolescents or young women all of that additional just frustration and fluster with, try this medication, see if this helps you. And then feeling like that disappointment of going back and being like, that didn't work. And then, like you talked about earlier too, is being like, well, what's wrong with me then? Because then this isn't working for me. So yeah, I would love to see this be more standard of care and be something that I'm definitely going to ask my doctor about.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Thank you for being on our show today. I know that the whole topic of pharmacy isn't directly correlated to money and wealth and finances, but there's the cost. And I really believe that, if we don't take preventative measures, if we're not putting in the right nutrition and exercise and sleep and water and all of the things, it will cost us in the long run. So anything we can do on the front end, preventative, and certainly taking that fast track to the right meds to heal us and give us that quality of life that we need is really super important. So I thank you for the work that you're doing. It's really important work.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. And thank you so much for reaching out to me. I think the more people know about it, the better we'll be as well. Just because I do think that preventative care is really important. You want to make sure that you're taking steps before you go, you end up in the hospital and, clinic or something like that. So thank you so much for reaching out to me, Melissa. And if you have any other questions, just let me know.
We will. And we will be sure to put the exactmeds.com link in the show notes so people can learn more and connect with you down the road.
Sounds great. Thank
awesome.
You.
Thanks, Ina.
Maybe this episode is part of your money ministry. Bless others by sharing it with a friend and posting on social media. While you're at it, we thank you in advance for subscribing to our podcast and leaving a 5-star review.
Our money ministry is helping you design your ideal lifestyle and be a blessing to others. Get started by heading over to melissamyersgroup.com/contact. Hop onto our email list. And while you're at it, schedule your free welcome call. We'll help you get clarity about what to do next.